Hello and welcome to the Pulpiteer Podcast, an audio online ministry of Pastor Andy Kroll and St. John's Pilgrim United Methodist Church. You can visit us online at pilgrimumchurch.com, or you can visit my blog at thepulpiteer.com for more sermons and writing.
So that God can work on us and transform us. This morning, the first sermon in our sermon series for Lent, which is a matter of death and life, we're going to look at Genesis chapter 9. So if you want to follow along, you can look at Genesis chapter 9. I'm going to be reading verses 8 to 17. As you're listening, I might as well give you something to do as you're listening. I want you to count in your head how many times I say in your head, because I used to teach seventh graders, so I know I don't want everyone to one, two during the reading. But count how many times you hear the word covenant in here, okay? Listen for the word covenant and see. We're just going to read a couple verses here and see how many times that happens. Then God said to Noah and his sons with him, "As for me, I'm establishing my covenant with you for your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds and the domestic animals, every animal of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." God said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I've set my bow in the clouds, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring the clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I'll remember my covenant that's between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I'll see it, and I'll remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that's on the earth." God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth." Would you bow your heads with me, please? Gracious and almighty God, I pray that the words of my mouth, the meditations of my heart, would be an acceptable sacrifice to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So the answer to the number you're going to have to be ready to yell out later is going to come later in the sermon, okay? So hold on to that number while you're listening. There's two things to do. Listen and hold on to the number, okay? So this is towards the end of the Noah story. And the Noah story is kind of, it's a terrifying story if you really think of it. It's kind of strange, because we treat it like it's like a kid's story, right? Like we'll teach our little kids that, and we'll have, like, it's common to have, like, if you have little babies and you have a nursery, it's common to have like Noah's Ark stuff there and that sort of stuff. We even have a book. This is a really good ABC book. A is for Ark, that goes over Noah's journey. It's really really cute. Let me see. Here we go. A is for Ark, right? So the first thing on the list, and then B is for beavers, bears, and bats, so that's really nice. And then D is for a horrible death by drowning. S is for screams that are silenced by rising water. Well, maybe it doesn't say the last two, but like if you think about the story, like that's like it's a crazy story, isn't it? It's not really so much a like kid's story, it's like a horror action film where almost everybody dies, right? It's this kind of crazy thing. And I think it's important for us as we hear this story to kind of realize what's going on. What are the bigger things going on in the background? And in this, you're going to see that God is moving from chaos into creation. And with this episode with the flood, it's kind of within that cycle of from chaos to creation. So I'll show you the movement. This is So you have chaos, and with the earth being a formless void, and God is going towards creation. God is creating. And so it says in Genesis 1, 1 and 2, "In the beginning when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep." So you get this picture of this primordial chaos. "And then a wind of God swept over the face of the waters." And so you get this primordial chaos, this uncreated universe, and with that you have waters associated with it. The Spirit of God swept over the waters, but with this is this formless void and this sort of stuff. Now what's God going to do with this formless void and this chaotic waters and these waters that are symbolic of this kind of primordial chaos? Well, the first thing God does is bring light. But the second thing is God creates a dome to separate the waters from the waters, which seems kind of weird, doesn't it? Waters from the waters. And so you get this picture of some sort of vertical separation. But notice what's happening is God is with light. There's light and then there's darkness. And then waters are separated from waters. In the midst of this chaos, what is God doing? Bringing some order. Bringing some order. And then after that, in Genesis 1, 9 to 10, God said, let the waters under the sky be gathered into one place and let dry land appear. So again, you get more kind of sorting and grouping. The night of land and sea. He said, they called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And so now you get waters that are divided under the sky, or under the dome and over the dome, and then you get waters under the dome that are grouped together. And you see from this chaos, from this primordial formless void, the way God is bringing creation is by bringing order. Bringing order into that creation. And as it's going towards the creation, God sees it and says, it is good. It's going from a formless primordial chaos to good creation. Yeah. Genesis 3 then points out the painful reality of what happened after that. We have the fall and the curse. But remember what happened. Humans went against the will of God. We became rebels against the purposes of God. That's an important point. God is bringing creation, bringing stuff this way towards creation, bringing order away from the chaos into order of creation. If you're rebelling against the will of God, does that mean you're going with God? No. What direction are you going? Good. I saw somebody point. Good. The first service, a couple of people went like this and like, some of you didn't even, like, you know, we know directions, right? So it's going to go this way, right? Back towards the chaos, right? So when you rebel against God, against God's direction, against what God is bringing things to order and creation and good. And when you rebel against him, which is what sin is, when we rebel against God, we're going back towards that formless void, that chaos, that sort of thing. It goes against that. And then we find that the horrible effects of sin build and build until in Genesis 6, we read that the wickedness of humankind was great in the earth and that every inclination of the thoughts of their hearts was only evil continually. And that leads up to Genesis 6:12, where it says, and God saw that the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth. All flesh. And I want you to think about what corruption means. For something to be corrupt, it has to first be good, doesn't it? It starts out good, and then it kind of starts to, it becomes corroded or corrupted or disintegrated or something like that. It has to deteriorate. You take something good, and you ruin it. That's what sin does. That's what sin does. And it says, all flesh had corrupted its ways on the earth. So again, you're starting at this good creation, but sin goes back this way, towards the chaos and towards the formless void. And as I'm laying this out, like, this is kind of a big picture, big idea. I mean, it's not, a lot of times we struggle with thinking, well, God just has a lot of rules and sin is breaking those rules. But I think as we get this bigger picture that we're seeing in the first part of Genesis is, well, no, it's not so simple as that. It's actually a lot worse. That when we rebel against God, that it has these profound effects on things. That when we rebel against God in our sin, that we're moving towards this formless void and this kind of unraveling and disintegrating, this formless chaos. And so I'm convinced that we consistently underestimate the profound damage that sin does. We consistently underestimate the profound damage that sin does. If you're corrupting good creation and you're deteriorating it, it's going back that way. So when God sends the floods, I think what God is doing is God's judgment is just saying, okay, this is what it is. You're going back towards chaos. Well, here you go. And what's associated with the chaos? The little primordial waters, right? And they're set loose. God's saying, look, everything's evil and you're corroding and corrupting everything. Then here the judgment is, here it is. Here come the floods. Things are moving backwards. Things are no longer sorted out where water is grouped together to be sea and land is grouped together to be land. It's moving backwards and undoing the creative acts. It's regression, disintegration. Things are falling apart at the seams. And I think that's an important thing to realize. Because again, I think it's too easy for us to picture the flood story as God has some rules he's picky about, like people were stealing bubblegum from 7-Eleven or not tithing regularly or mowing the lawn on Sundays in shorts with like dress socks pulled up. Like God was just like disgusted with that and he's really picky, so he sent them. No. It's that we are moving, God's good creation was here and rebelled against him and went against God, which meant it was going back towards that chaos. And so the effects of this rebellion are the corrosive and corruptive effects. And God declares then with judgment that this is corrupt and the waters break loose. I mean, listen to chapter 7, verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep burst forth and the windows of the heavens were opened. This doesn't sound like, and then there was a rainstorm. Like there's something cosmic, on a cosmic level going on, right? It doesn't say, and then, boy howdy, did they have rain for 40 days, right? It's not that simple. The windows of the heavens were let up. And you almost get in your mind that whole, like, dome to separate the domes. It's like, we're going backwards. Things are unraveling, and all of a sudden, just this primordial waters come out. And things are just devolving. And so as you wrestle with that, I guess one of the things that I want to emphasize with that is, again, this idea that we constantly underestimate the destructive nature of our sin, especially our own sin. Like, we may not so much underestimate the destructive nature of our neighbor's sin, right? We're pretty sure he needs Jesus pretty bad, and we're glad that God has put us in his life or whatever. But I think it's easy to underestimate the destructive nature of our own sin. That when I rebel against God, that it has these ripple effects that are really destructive, that are destructive. You can see it, like you can see it in different things. So sometimes we have more extreme examples of things. So when people are addicted, like addiction plays out that way, and you see how it destroys someone, how it disintegrates them, how they hurt the people closest to them, they put walls and push people away, and then even physically they start to deteriorate because of this addiction that they have. But it's not just an addiction to substances. What if you got an addiction to other stuff? Because that can happen too, as you're addicted to your own sin or your own pleasure or your own whatever it is, and you build up walls and you push people away and things are torn down and you start to become less of who you're supposed to be, and that image of God in you, of who you're supposed to be, starts to be deteriorated as that sin starts to take over. And it could be that, it could be, I don't know, it could be using your words poorly and gossip and backbiting and things like that. It could be, I don't know, being abusive, whatever. There's ripple effects of destruction that seep out from that. And I really want you to consider that today. Like, the whole point of this, like bringing up the cosmic nature of this Noah story, is to place our sin in context. God is going this way towards a good creation. And every time we rebel, we're pushing back that way. And what happened in Genesis is people were pushing back, pushing back, pushing back, and eventually God said, fine, you can have the chaos. You can have the chaos. Like, this is what happens when you reject the God of the good creation. This is what you get. The primordial waters are set free and set loose. So, if this corruption is going to end, how could it end? I mean, what are we going to do? Who's going to put an end to this? I mean, if we are all broken in sin, and like there's just a part of us that just wants to rebel against God, how's that going to stop? How's that going to end? Who's going to put a halt to this descent back into chaos? And we read, what we read today comes after the flood. The first part of chapter 9 is like a second shot at creation, like a second chance. And then you notice what happens in the verses that we read today. God steps in. God steps in and says, you know what? I'm going to put a stop to this. I'm going to put an end to this sliding backwards. And God even speaks of covenant. In fact, how many times? Seven times. There's only just a couple verses there, right? Once I told you to count it, weren't you like, holy cow, there's a lot of covenants in here, right? Just for a couple of verses. It's almost like the Bible wants you to pay attention to that. And you notice the covenant wasn't just between God and the humans, but all the created beings. You see, it's good creation that God wants. All of creation. And so God makes this covenant with all of creation, not to bring out the waters of chaos again. Now, as you think about that, what could we possibly do to earn that? I mean, when we're fighting against God, and God says, you know what, but I'm not going to let it get as bad as it should be. What do you do to earn that or deserve? There's nothing we can do. We didn't earn it. God is putting a stop to the chaos because God is taking creation somewhere. Like, that's the big thing. God is taking creation somewhere. God has good and right purposes for creation, and he's not going to let sin and destruction ruin it. He's not going to let sin and chaos and the primordial chaos, he's not going to let that stuff win, because this is God's good creation, and God is a good God and a faithful God who does not let sin finally win. God acts, and God acts in a covenant that's unilateral. There's no Noah has to do this or that. God acts in a way, he just says, you know what? I'm going to put a stop to this. I'm going to put a halt to this. You guys are driving this whole thing back towards dissolution and chaos, and I'm stopping it now because this is my good creation, and I love it too much to just let it go. God takes the initiative. And that initiative is this first step, is to hold back these destructive effects of our sin and rebellion. God promising that these primordial waters of chaos and darkness won't be unleashed. Sin and destruction won't win out. But in stopping this move and putting it on pause, that's just the beginning of it, actually. This is like this one of the first steps in God's rescue mission. You see, God has this plan for his good creation. He's always had this plan. He has this place that he wants us to be. We are created in the image of God. And we weren't created in the image of God so we could be destroyed by sin. God has something for us. God has something in plan for his good creation. So when he sees it all falling apart, he says, we're going to stop it right here. We're going to stop this thing from falling apart right here. That's where Noah's at. But it continues forward. And then there's this guy named Abram and his wife Sarai. And they get this promise. And then they get their names changed. And then they get this promised land. And they have more and more kids and more and more kids. And they actually get delivered into this promised land through the leadership of this man named Moses that God raises up and calls. And the rescue plan continues. And it continues building and building. And these people, they become a nation in this place. And this nation, as it grows, it produces a king. King David, a man after God's own heart. And then God was talking to King David because David wasn't the rescue plan. It was continuing to go forward, right? God had a plan, not just for the Jewish people, but for all of creation. He's going to rescue all of creation. And so he says to David, I promise you, there will always be somebody from your line on the throne. And David and they're all thinking, well, it must be there's this human king that's coming, right? They're thinking this must be some sort of military thing or whatever it is. And time kept moving forward and forward. And even it looked dark because they were conquered and moved into exile. But lo and behold, God brought him back, and then it keeps moving forward and forward, and then God does this amazing thing. He sends his own son to come down and to be that one that is sitting on David's throne because it's God's rescue mission to go towards this good creation, and it moves forward and forward. But wouldn't you know it, the same people who wanted to push us back into chaos when God himself come to be with us said, hey, we want to kill God too, because it's the same movement. To go back into chaos is the same movement to try and kill the Lord of all. And so then we killed him. But then something amazing happened. Something incredible. I mean, you wouldn't even believe it. But you got to come back April 1st to hear about it. But until that time, we remember that this first move of God putting a pause on the destruction and on the chaos is a move of grace. Dr. Hamilton wrote about the rainbow. Whenever the bow appears, it serves as a reminder that despite the fact that the world deserves judgment, God will show restraint and mercy. It's amazing, isn't it? That despite the fact that the world deserves judgment, God shows restraint and mercy. The rainbow reminds us of that. So as we enter into the season of Lent, it's appropriate for us to consider our sinfulness because we want to really be aware of our need for God's grace. We want to be really aware of what's actually going on, of the bigger picture and the bigger story. And I think once we grasp and once we stop underestimating the destructive nature of our own sin, Once we start to underestimate the destructive nature of our own sin, we will start to appreciate how amazing God's grace and love for us is. We're going to end the sermons during Lent with times of prayerful reflection. And so to do that, what we're going to do is we'll have a little bit of music playing in the background. The rails will be open if you'd like to come up here and pray. You could also pray in the pews. But I'd like you to prayerfully reflect on these two questions. What if you were fully held to account for your sin? Like, what if God didn't put it on pause and stop the backward slide? And then second, after you think about that, how wonderful is God's grace that he does put it on pause and end the slide into chaos because he wants to rescue you? Let's spend some time in prayer as we consider those things.